please step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance 484. I'm Nicole Shiro, and today I am joined by the Coco Extravaganza hosts, Bob Tolero and Ann Ciccolella, and on the board with our friend and today an additional co-host, the talented Tracy Schultz. You're listening to KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby and KOOP.org. Each week we take a look at theater from many angles. If it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air.
Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah. Stephen.
It's Wednesday, September 26, 2018, and today we have on the show St. Edward's University Department of Performing Arts with Will Enos Middletown. We also have Austin Shakespeare on with Anthony and Cleopatra.
Anthony. Thank you.
Sorry, oh, yeah. No, there's no H in here, I'm just saying Anthony. Anthony and Cleopatra, and of course we'll have lively discussions including the news and views from the world of theater in Austin, New York. We're going to talk about London today and beyond. Stay with
and
us.
Beyond.
Is that a very bizarre song? And I
something about Hitler?
Well, no, he just was singing. He was stuck in a place in between there and some other different murders, and he was listing a whole bunch of bad people. But that was only one part of the thing. It's actually from a musical called Stephen Ward, which I didn't know. I was stumbling upon it, looking for different music. I'm like, what is this? Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was like, what is this? Steven's not a good guy, just so you know. And a lot of the album was very explicit. It's a lot of interesting orchestrations. I was actually a little fascinated by it, but I couldn't play a lot. That song was entitled Human Sacrifice, and we didn't even get to any of that weird stuff, but... Yes, if you're curious about that like I was, there's a whole bunch of interesting stuff online to learn about it, but not the typical Andrew Lloyd Webber you hear of. I just found it a little interesting. So I just want to say thank you to Kim Simpson for another wonderful international folk bazaar.
Yeah.
Kim always rocks the house. I love that, Kim. And I just kind of, I have a lot of you to check in with. So we got to be quick on this. We have time. I'm checking in with you, Tracy, Bob, and Ann.
Hi. It's happy to be here.
Hello out there in Radio Land.
How are all of you?
Doing well. Yeah.
Good?
We're good. I got a note from Nick Mayo in New York.
Oh,
he says hi.
We missed Mayo, our other co-host that's no longer with us.
That's right. He was at the opening night of Barnhart Hamlet last night.
You didn't say Barnhart, did you?
Barnhart.
Bernhardt.
Sir Bernhardt. He wrote Barnhart. very good. It's very good. Starring Janet Mittier. And then he saw Collective Rage, a play in five Bettys. It's very good. Passing that on.
Yeah, he texted me about the collective plays he saw last week, and he emailed me about that. And we're going to talk about Bernhardt Hamlet. And shame on you, Nick Mayo, because I know you'll stream live from New York. You should have texted me ahead of time to call in and give your reviews.
Oh.
Shame, shame. You were supposed
Maybe next week.
You were supposed to do that when you left the show, and you didn't.
He has that obligation.
But I still love you. So I do want to talk about Bernhardt and the Hamlet, Bernhardt Hamlet reviews. I am fascinated by that too. But I just wanted to, on a quick sad note, we had a passing. This is one of those crazy obituaries that you just, your mouth keeps going and going and going when you see how intertwined and what they did for the theater world. It was Merle Dubusky, who was the mm-hmm. dean of theatrical press agents, 95 years old. I mean, very, 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 very full life. But an interesting one at that, where he headed at Pam. I guess I find it also very interesting too, because I should say, in my real world, I am a publicist and I handle a lot of arts and music and theater. So to me, I was like, man, Merle was the man. Like, you know, he's kind of that Hugh Jackman in life for the press agents, I guess. So he, you know, he ran the press agents. The press agents actually have a union. I don't think people are aware of that, that in the Broadway world and in the touring community world, there is a union for press agents, just as there is for composers and stagehands and stage managers and actors and dancers. There are all these different types of unions. And ATPAM is the union for the press agent. This guy, basically, though, he's known for working with Julian Bond, known for working with Cohen, but Joseph Papp. Joseph Papp was the big one that he really worked with and paved the way. And I totally forgot the name of it, and I didn't have time to put it in. It was interesting, when he died, there was another podcast I was recently listening to about one of the gentlemen who is actually the biggest litigators and helps with theatrical rights, which is another whole interesting world of crazy. And he just wrote this new book and was on this podcast, and they were talking about all these specific examples of rights. And a lot of the stuff was things that Dubuisky did with Papp. And I was like, oh, it was so interesting. So we'll have to post both of them. Very full life. We have an entire, we have this article and some other ones that we'll post online. So hats off to you, Merle. You did a lot of, you did a lot of good. Wow. So I know. All right. The reviews. Bernhardt Hamlet. First of all,
I'm going to say Barnyard.
Barnyard.
I'm going to see it in a couple of weeks.
Well, it's kind of like, it's kind of like, when Lisa and I like to call it, when this, after the Tonys a few years ago, one reviewer added the names together and it was the Bountiful Trip to Pippin. And Lisa and I were like, what? And he really just can put both of those shows together. And it, and people made their own show poster artwork for The Bountiful Trip to Pippin, which was kind of everything. But listen, this just had love letter after love letter after love letter. Who doesn't love some Janet McTeer? She looks really pretty in this. Everybody heard that on the radio, how pretty she looks. I didn't find a lot of really bad things. Everything I kept finding, I love that, is it chance or synchronicity that brings Bernhardt Hamlet, a muscular comedy about a woman unbound, to Broadway at this grim transitional moment in gender politics? Either way, Teresa Rybeck's new play, which opened on Tuesday at the American Airlines Theater, is so clever it uplifts and so timely it hurts. And that's a depressing thing to say about a story set in 1899 in that temple of chauvinism, the French popular theater. Janet McTeer stars as Sandra Bernhardt, then in her mid-50s and aging out of the dying courtesan roles that made her world famous. And as far as Shakespeare is concerned, she's caught in the gap between Ophelia and Gertrude. So why not try Hamlet? I never read that much, Norma. That was Jesse Green. And I was like, great. That was so well written. Jesse, I'm actually going to read a lot of what you wrote today. I was like, it kind of really summed it up. I printed a few different reviews, but it just went on. They said they could have picked, even from Teresa's writing, they were talking about how she could have picked a richer subject, even though, you know, Sarah Bernhardt was charismatic and colorful and lived large. But the way she put everything together, you realize as soon as the lights go up and she begins soliloquizing, oh, what a rogue and peasant slave I am. We are immediately and completely and utterly spellbound. I was like, yeah.
Wow.
Woo! So, yeah, it's on my list. I was just, my cousin, my sister's running the New York City Marathon this year. What? I'm so proud of her. And so we're going up, and that's one of the shows that I'm going to see. Along with, I have to, speaking of my family, I have to talk about my grandmother for a minute. I got this incredible package that everyone can see in the studio. It's a big mailer, old school, for my grandmother. And I open it up, and she sent me the entire New York Times art section, because it is not only the preview to the entire Broadway season that's coming up, because she can't stand me talking about the darn animatronic Kong that I've been following since Australia, because I'm so fascinated by the puppet. Not so much the show as the puppet. Oh, that's on the list for when I'm there for the marathon. I was just talking to Mom today. But
Can we just talk about my 94-year-old grandmother still drives a Ford Explorer and protests at City Hall? Mabel, you are everything. So the New York Arts and Leisure, just recently, the Times had out this whole section. And that puppet, I know. It's hard not to talk about Kong every week, so we're going to leave it close. Okay, we're going to talk about something really kind of crazy that made me really happy. And this is why I'll save it because we're going to go out with this song. So I'll save that little teeny bit. Okay, this scares me. Cats the Musical, we know they were making into a movie. Huh. And they've started casting. So let me read some of the cast. One, Ian McClellan. Mm-hmm. One, James Corden. One, Jennifer Hudson. Yes, everybody's faces are totally like, what, huh, huh? And one, Taylor Swift.
Oh.
Exactly. This is how I feel. I had to make a soundbite because this is how I feel about it. Nancy Kerrigan sums it up for me. So the best part is someone asked Andrew Lloyd Webber about who Taylor Swift would be playing. And he says, she's going to be playing one of the other McCavity girls, saying, I'm not sure yet. Well, basically, Tom Hooper thought it was a really good idea. And of course, she loved cats. She loves cats. Well, see, I mean, I haven't met her, so I'm looking forward to meeting her and seeing her at work. Hmm. Dude, that scares me. That is his response. Well, I don't know. She likes cats.
But does she like cats or does she like cats?
No, it wasn't cats, capital.
Oh, it wasn't italics.
No, it's like meow, the real ones that you have at home.
Is it just me or does it sound like a Slings and Arrows episode somehow?
It totally sounds like one, but unfortunately it's reality. Yeah. But we're all, I mean, I guess we're all living in some sort of episode these days. We just don't know it.
It'll sell. There's that.
Sadly, yeah. I know. Listen, I'm going to admit it. There was a time when my friend Ellen Air and I, through the 80s, loved cats. We used to follow the tour around, and she brought it up. She actually posted on Facebook and outed me on that one, so I cannot not admit that this is what happened in the 80s. There was a time.
I'm sorry.
I know. But, you know.
Made you happy.
It made me happy then. Yeah. Listen, the guy wrote Jesus Christ Superstar. I can't get mad at him. I want to, but I can't. this I kind of find fascinating. Jean-Michel Basquiat, the artist, there is a new show that is being created on his life, which I find fascinating. There's not a lot of stuff out for it yet. They only just announced that John Doyle is going to be directing it and has attached the development. It will be a musical. They have not attached everybody yet to it, but I'm like, okay, I like where we're going so far. I don't know where in his life they're following him. I mean, he is such a fascinating individual as an artist and as a person and an icon and how he changed the art world and art culture, especially in the Pulse of New York at the time. So I don't know, but sadly, you know, we lost him too young. He was another one, but I'm kind of excited. They haven't announced a whole bunch on that. So
it's interesting you say that because it's like, there's a hip hop magazine, Fader. And mm-hmm. the guy who writes for Fader is super interested in this show. And he is like, I hope they do something like Sundays in the Park with George. I hope they do something about that, like that one scene in Rent.
It's interesting. Casting. I have read this in more music and art, totally where theater is never covered. I have seen this covered more and more, even more than Duncan Sheik's new piece that he's working on, which I found interesting. And I'm like, hey, you're getting a whole new group of people that normally wouldn't have access or be reading about theater news all the time, reading about theater. So I don't know. I don't, there's not a lot about it for me to go, ah, yeah.
personally, I'm excited and I can't wait to see where it's going. This kind of cracked me up, and I want to play a little bit of this podcast. This is another podcast. Lisa and I have talked about it once or twice. I think it's probably one of my favorite podcasts. It's called Support for This Podcast. Have you listened to this, yes, Bob Tolero?
I have.
So it is run by the Santino Fontana is going to go on it coming up shortly, which made me want to bring it up again because his wife, Jessica Fontana, is actually one of the co-founders and runs the actual program. She has an alter ego. Her name is Emily Ann Laura Becca. So basically, the entire podcast are all mockumentaries. They're all mockumentary characters. I want to play a little bit of the opening of one she just recently did with Andrea Martin. But Andrea Martin is Martina Andrews, a 71-year-old mother who has never shopped online. And I'm going to play just a little bit of the opening so you kind of get a feel for what this...
Love that, Andrea Martin.
Well, how do you not love Andrea Martin? Speaking of Pippin, right? You know? So here's a little bit of that clip.
Today on Support for This Podcast.
My son's getting married and I need to get a dress.
Oh, lovely.
And I just had bunion surgery, so I can't walk.
Okay.
And 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 so I can't walk.
Oh, okay. No.
And
oh,
so
no.
I can't. Okay, it really walk. Isn't. It really was supposed to keep going. Which oh, made it sound even funnier if she was like, oh, so I can't walk. But it, you get an idea of the mockumentary. She starts talking about how she has total panic attacks by a possible, if she went to the zoo, what would happen? The monkeys could attack her. So she but she has the panic attacks about thinking about going to go to this. It is so funny. All these different episodes are so funny. So the next one coming up, she's actually going to be interviewing her husband. It's funny when she signs off and she's like, and this is Emily and Anne and Laura and Becca. Like, and she just keeps going and going and going. So he is going to be on Tootsie. He's opening up in Tootsie and he's going to be on it the same day that Tootsie's opening. So it'll be kind of hilarious. I don't know if we know who his character is going to be yet. Oh, he's going to be struggling actor Michael Dorsey. So I don't know what Michael Dorsey's shtick is, but I guess when we listen to Support to Radio, we'll find out. I did not make this theater sound because it's our favorite sound. It's probably the only really sound effect we normally do, and I didn't make it today. But we like the Law and Order, ding, ding, because we have a lot of crime. And I didn't stick it in there because I got so excited about putting in why that it totally went out of my head. But boy, we had some crime. Mm. A gentleman who is the puppet master at One Lion King thought it'd be cool to print a 3D weapon backstage at the show while it was going on in the prop room.
Really?
Yeah. No, I kid you not. I couldn't make that one up. He was arrested. Yeah. I was like, okay. First of all, I mean, the idea of printing this in the first place makes me crazy, but the thought of, like, you work for Disney, you're at a theater, you're on the job and supposed to be making puppets, and you know you're in New York State with some hefty laws. Like, what are you? Yes. Yes. He was in the theater prop room. Thank God for the cleaning. There were folks cleaning and saw him in the prop room and saw the printer and saw what was going on and notified the authorities.
That's also, it's also weird that they knew what it was going to be in some ways. So they had like a little bit of an idea about it's like how it
was. Well, I don't think a 3D printer sticks out of a costume prop. No, it's not part of the Lion King repertoire. No. So they saw the giant printer powered on, moving, and in operation. The memory card was found plugged into the side of the printer and was making an object that had a hand grip, a pointed, snub-nosed nozzle, and between two features, an empty space where it is customary for a cylinder holding live rounds of ammunition to be placed. That's how far into it he was.
Pretty wild.
His response was, I was making the gun as a gift to my brother. He lives upstate and has a firearms license. So he downloaded... Yeah, I know. So it just goes on. But he's been on part of the Disney show. He's a big puppeteer. It's kind of very, very interesting. Yeah. I just was kind of like, That's a different type of crime on Broadway.
And Austin Connection, the company that makes those blueprints for those guns, are here in town.
I know. Yeah, they're in a whole bunch of other trouble. So I should say the statements made on this show are ours and ours alone and not that of co-op or the board of directors of this station.
Yeah, it's always good.
So, you know, I like to say why a lot all the time about these movies being turned into musicals and vice versa in this one. And I'm torn at this, yet if it's done right, it could be kind of fascinating. I don't know. This is another one that's been in mainstream news everywhere from Deadline to Hollywood Reporter.
Yes.
Is Cameron Crowe has confirmed Almost Famous will become a musical. The movie Almost. See? You're not like, but you're not. Yeah. Right.
I'm actually surprised it's taken this long. It seems like it's kind of... that whole coming of age story kind of fits in the songs and Elton John, it all kind of works.
Well, I believe it's going to be original music and not all pop, which is interesting because it's about a writer writing about, so I'm not quite sure. No one has confirmed everything, but Page Six thinks the unidentified piano man in the video, because Cameron Crowe posted a little bit of video to tease it even more, they think is the composer Tom Kitt, who was the music arranger behind Green Day's musical American Idiot. So it's the right person and the right team to put in place. But I don't know. I find it kind of interesting and fascinating. We'll have to watch that one. But yeah, Cameron has been out there talking about it. So I'm like, the man wants this done. He is. That's what he's focused on these days. So here's one last story before I go into the one little news to play this song. And I had to talk about this since you're on here today with One Cleopatra. But did you know there's a new immersive musical Cleopatra debuting off Broadway?
I'm frightened.
let me tell you.
It's immersive.
It's got a nightlife experience and it's taking over Chelsea Music Hall. It fuses music, dance, theater, and nightlife. There is a live DJ on site. The audience is invited into a lavish party thrown by the legendary Queen of the Nile. RuPaul's Drag Race contestant, Dusty Ray Bottoms, will star as the Mistress of Ceremony, and Naya from Motown the Musical and Christian Brailsford from The Lion King will lead the cast in the roles of the ill-fated lovers Cleopatra and Mark Antony. Has original music and lyrics with Jeff Day and Laura Kleinbaum. It's set to open in October. Further casting will be announced at a later date. They not only have like sound designer, lighting designer, they have an electronic music designer credit. I was like, oh, this is crazy. Check her out. She's kind of like Beyonce meets Salt and Pepper in a way.
Yeah. Little Kim Kardashian.
Photo. So that just made me laugh. But the best part, my favorite news in life, and Lisa and I did not get a chance to talk about it last week, so I could not slight my favorite woman, one Dolly Parton. Did you know 9 to 5 never moved? 9 to 5 played New York, it was on Broadway. We all know the movie. Dolly's recently announced she and Lily and Jane are getting back together. They're making a second movie. Dolly's been working on another Broadway musical all about her life. What? Dolly's bringing 9 to 5 to England. Wow. Why is that exciting, you say? Because Dolly made the best promotional video about it. She's sitting behind a desk. I didn't make the clip of it. She's sitting behind a desk and she's like, "Hi, y'all." And I'm like, "Oh my God, I love you." And she calls up all the cast members in England. So she's all like, "Hi, it's Dolly. Get ready. We're going to do the show." And you hear, "Hello, Dolly, I'm on my way." And it's like this juxtaposition of this proper English and sweet Dolly. And they're all brushing their teeth and getting ready and singing a little bit of 9 to 5. And then you see the castmates walking down the street. And then they get to the theater and they're all singing 9 to 5. And they cut back to Dolly in her. She is this giant Union Jack teacup. And she's just sitting there going, "We're coming to London, y'all." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, field trip, road trip." Why is it that Wimbledon, Shakespeare, and Dolly Parton want me to come to England? It's like the weirdest combination. But it just brought me such joy. So I just thought we'd listen to a little bit of Broadway's 9 to 5. And we'll be back in a moment with some guests. Well, hello, we are back. You know what I just realized? Everybody was disembodied voices. I didn't introduce a single person in here. Yeah, that was really kind of awful. I will shame myself live on air. And before we introduce our guest real quick, I'm going to say hello to everybody so you know who we've been talking to. Ann Chicalella.
Hello.
Hello. Ray Schultz.
Hello.
Hello, Jackie Cross.
Hey.
Hello, Micheline Langlois.
Hi.
Hello, M. Michelle Polgar.
Hello.
Hello. Everyone is here. Sorry about that. So we are excited. We're going to talk to St. Edward's University right now about this production of Middletown. So, Bob, I'm going to ask you to take your co-host hat. I was trying to get the hat and the host and the co-host hat off and become a guest.
All right, great.
Are you ready?
Sure.
We did like a do-si-do around the, I know, I was going to move over to the right, but grab your partner. So, Bob, you were doing this wonderful production in Middletown. Please tell us a little bit about this.
Will Eno is one of the very up-and-coming playwright. He was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize for one of his plays, and we are doing Middletown. This playwright has been compared to, they call him, one of the reviews in New York Times called him the Samuel Beckett of the John Stewart age.
Oh, that's a great description.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that great? So we got a hold of this, and I know Hyde Park did a prediction of it, I think, last year or 2 years ago. And there's an affection for him, especially in New York, for this playwright. And we've been working real hard to play with his words. He has a wonderful sense of language, and it's a wonderful story. And it's kind of our town's cubed. You know what I mean? It's like there's so much more poetry and philosophies involved with it. But we follow the town and the little inhabitants of the town in these little vignettes. And then he throws in a lot of philosophy and almost theology, small t.
Small
t theology. In terms of life, he said there's birth and there's death and everything else is in the middle. And so we explore the middle with all these different characters. So far, it's been fun.
Oh, that's kind of...
Yeah, we open... When do we open?
Thursday.
Tomorrow, right? Okay, I'll be there.
You better get your Peggy Lee on. You better start singing Mañana, buddy.
Yeah.
Mañana. Yeah. Remember that? It's a good tune.
Right. So we have a wonderful cast.
How many are in your cast?
I don't know. 11, 12. Jackie Cross is one of our guest artists, and yay. Ben Wolf is our other Equity guest artist.
Yay. Yes.
So we've added things to the show because when we hired Jackie, they said, "What are you bringing Jackie in for?" I said, "Because my librarian's going to be a singing librarian."
I love it. So you did. You really did get to utilize all the talents of Jackie. That's kind of awesome. So it makes this a little special and different. Has it been done before with this piece? No, it's the Bob Tolero flair, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, we've added some stuff. But it's all integral. It's a wonderful, there's wonderful integration of music and movement and as well as the language. So it's a kind of a total theater kind of event.
And you have a little bit of a scene?
We're going to do a scene for you. I'm going to play one of the characters. I'm going to be the mechanic in the librarian's ink. Jackie plays the librarian, and Miss Langlois plays Mrs. Swanson, who has just come to Middletown, and she meets the librarian.
Good morning.
Morning.
I was hoping to get a library card.
Good for you, dear. I think a lot of people figure, why bother? I'm just going to die anyway. Let me just find that form.
I wanted to learn more about the area. Do you have any books on Middletown?
Well, I should certainly hope so. Let me take a look. And voila! Oops. No, sorry, we don't. There's a wonderful book called Yesteryear in Today's City of Tomorrow. But it's out. Oh. It's due next Tuesday.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, here's something from the Chamber of Commerce, just to give you a general sense. Middletown was built on the ruins of other older Middletowns, and before them, a town called Middleton, which was named for being between two other places, both unknown and now incidentally gone. That doesn't sound right. Incidentally gone. Anyway, 1,000 years ago, the area was home to the Chalkmaw Indian, and it was called Inpetwe, which no one knows what it means, but it might have meant you are far away or far away from me. The Chalkmaw had a highly developed culture, and they thrived in their time until they disappeared forever. New residents arrived and looked around. That's not much of a sentence, but I guess it still gives us a picture. People kind of lost and smiling. But okay, let's see. Arrived and looked around. Today, Middletown is a beehive, a human beehive of activity and business. Many come to raise families and watch, swollen with civic pride, as their baby draws its first breath of local air. Also drawn by the excellent clouds and the mostly silent nights, many come here to quietly retire. Middletown, we've got you coming and going.
That's from the Chamber of Commerce?
I know. There's a lot that it doesn't mention. There's a library here and, of course, the people, which is what most places are made of, if you think about it.
I guess. I'll wait for that other book. We just moved here.
I'm listening in on your conversation.
Sorry. You were saying?
My husband and I just moved here.
Well, welcome. Is it just you two?
It's just us. He travels, but we're here now. Well, I am. We're trying to start a family.
Come on, family, start. Start, you bastards.
Shh. Well, welcome to you both. That's wonderful. How long have you been trying?
Almost a year now.
And I imagine it must be about the same for your husband. Well, good. Something you both can work on. Good for you. The world needs another person.
And there you go.
Oh, that was delightful. This is one of those days where Lisa and I used to have the webcam on in here, and we totally should have, because that was like, we were all just enjoying it just as much as you were all enjoying performing it. So, oh, that's delightful. How witty and fun. So Jackie, she's got a lot of words and things to say. I mean, what's it like playing a character
like
this?
Oh, I love her. And it's been on my bucket list to do work at St. Ed. So I'm thrilled that Bob
this
has...
This is the first time?
First time.
You've been there, right?
Second time you're ever doing a drama in my life. You know, I'm a musical girl.
Is it really only the second time?
Second time. The first one was this Random World at Austin Playhouse. Yeah, just last year.
So how do you find... How are you... finding the process of going into something like this with Middletown? I mean, I know you've added some music, as Bob has said, but how do you find a process of rehearsing for a musical is very different
very
than
different.
Rehearsing, even though it's you really have to pay attention to the words, it's different. So
yeah.
What is that process like for you?
Well, it's been great. Bob has been, I've learned so much through him. Because I'm not in dramatics as much as my musical expertise, I wanted to do it so I can just push myself. Even at the ripe old age that I am, there's always room for growth, mm-hmm. right? And I'm always looking to explore my artistic abilities, and this show has certainly helped me in that arena. It's just been a blast.
That's really cool. And so, Micheline, I saw you shaking your head when she started talking about Bob and direction and finding things. So I feel like you have more to say about that. Tell us a little bit about what was going on as you were shaking that.
It's been wonderful. It's the first time I've been able to work with Bob, and it's just been really cool seeing him do something like this. I've only seen him really do classical work, and he came into the process and was like, we're all just going to take this on. And we're going to ride with it. And it's been an amazing experience right from the start, right from the first read through. It's been beautiful.
Bob, you have a good creative team on this, don't you?
I do. Let's see if I can remember any of them. Susan Branch is doing our costumes. And Elliot Haynes is doing our sound.
Love that, Elliot.
Yeah, he does some good stuff. There's an outer space scene in the show, so he's had fun with that. Rachel Atkinson.
Jump on up.
Rachel Atkinson. She's doing our lighting. She's always wonderful. She's so great to work with. She just has this wonderful calm, you know. You never know what's going on inside. It's just always this. So she's lovely. And then we have our props person.
And Ia. Props person, Lila Stewart, is doing props for us.
Right.
And the brilliant Ia and Stara is...
Ia.
Ia, you know. She comes in, drops in, designs a show, goes back to Finland.
Isn't it funny how Ia, like, all of a sudden just creates a space in a set, and you're like, wait, she was here for how long? Wait, turn her. And it's just like... I feel like she's kind of Mary Poppins with a set. Really, kind of who she is.
She's so imaginative, and we talk to her a lot about that. She blames it on living where she lives because the arts are so differently treated in the Netherlands and up there, and they are free. They don't have to worry about health care. They don't have to worry about much. Their support is so differently from America, and she is free to be so creative, and she brings this energy over here. And all the shows, I go to see all her shows, they're just fascinating. And this is another one.
And it's another one. And that's another one. So do you want to, just so folks know, explain a little bit about how the program, you explain how Jackie and Ben are your two equity actors, but maybe explain to folks a little more about the program and how this works with Stand Up, because this is really special and not a lot of students have this opportunity.
Yeah, we're actually, last check, we are the only undergraduate-only institution in the U.S. that has a full season under an ERTA contract with Actors Equity Association.
I knew it was whittled down to 3 or 4. You're the only one
now? We do a full season, and we have between 3 and 4 contracts per show. And so the students are working alongside equity guests for everything that we do. And I would actually ask Michelin what she thinks about that.
It's been amazing watching, especially Jackie and Ben, just seeing y'all think on your feet. And it's just been awesome thinking, like, to hopefully one day to get like that. Like, and it's been beautiful, especially Ben. He's an alumni of St. Ed's. So that's been really, really cool. It's like, you know, our alma mater coming in, and it's been awesome.
It's so exciting. I we have to talk about that more and get you back on here to talk about the program. You're the only one. That really bothers me right now.
The model
for undergrad. I mean, that's a lot.
It's the same model as someplace like Playmakers Repertory Company at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, but typically it's a graduate program. And so undergraduates would be, you know, spear carrier number 79, and that would be the role that they'd be in. And they'd still have the opportunity to work alongside professionals and also the graduate students. But with us, these guys are not competing with grad students. It's all undergrads, and everybody's got a fair shot at really some meaty stuff.
Well, I have to tell you, one of the most special moments I've had with my Gigi in life was when she loved Parade, and I took her to see Parade, and she cried, and she ran up to poor Mike McKelvey and started speaking Gaelic, and I'm like, I don't think he speaks Gaelic, but go right ahead. And yeah, I know, she thinks everyone's Irish when she sees a Mick. So and she's gone now, but I still talk about that experience because she was so, not only was it the piece, but it was what the program's meant to her as someone that supported that. And so I always have that special moment and always put that together with your program. And I didn't go to St. Ed's, but I still love it. So thank you very much for doing all that.
It's pretty great. And it's really great, especially if, you know, something like bringing Ben Wolf back as an equity guest artist when he graduated from the program. I love being able to do that. It's super exciting. And having some amazing talent like the brilliant Miss Cross here is just super fun.
Oh, well, that's so excited. Well, I'm so happy you guys came on. We're out of time, sadly. I'm going to ask for a task because we're going to play this. We're going to go out with some music and play a little break real quick and then come back for a moment. But I want to just ask a number. Michelle, can you give me a number between 2 and 30?
3.
So we'll have that waiting in a few moments, but so thank you all very much. I just want to thank Bob Tolero, Jackie Cross, Michelin Langlois, Michelle Polgar. That was St. Edward's University's Performing Arts with their production of Middletown, playing the Mary Moody Norden Theater September 27th, that's tomorrow, through October 7th. For more information, stedwards.edu/theater. But it's very easy to put in St. Edward's Middletown. It all comes up. I found it very easy that way, too, both ways. So stedwards.edu/theater, and we'll be back in a moment. I chose a little song called In a Little Town.
In a little town in America.
Hi, I'm Lucy Arnaz, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin.
Oh,
that was a good one, that Lucy Arnaz. She just announced a new project, too. And she, that was when she was here with Austin Cabaret Theater, which, you know what? We're going to do a little bit local. I'm going to bring it out because I'm so excited. The countdown has begun officially. 1 month, as of yesterday, will be October 25th. And that is the evening when Leslie Margarito will be here with Austin Cabaret Theater. Who is Leslie Margarito, do you ask? Why, yeah. She is one of only the most charming and talented, quirky, and hilarious Broadway stars. You may have known her for her rave role playing Mrs. Wormwood in Matilda, the musical, against one Gabriel Ebert, who won the Tony for the Mr. Wormwood. Not only that, after she finished with Matilda, she did a production of a Christmas, one-woman Christmas show called Who's Holiday? And it's Cindy Lou Who. She's all Cindy grown up, and she lives in the trailer park. Oh. And she likes to drink and use profanities. And, oh my gosh, I can't even play the trailer clips on air. I've wanted to do Cindy Lou Who. There is nothing I can play. It's so inappropriate. It's everything. But if you look up Who's Holiday, you can find all these different little clips and stuff. But that is Leslie Margarita. She's done a lot of other things. But, man, I am excited. That's a score and a half. So, Austin Cabaret Theater, they have so many amazing folks on this season. But that's more info on that one.
That sounds great.
The countdown began. Tonight is one Neil Patrick Harris.
Yes.
You know, you got to have a little MPH in your life, I suppose.
There's a few folks that are coming through town. That's a big one. Neil Patrick Harris. It's like, that's a big deal. I may have to go to that tonight.
He's and I think it's just with his children's book, right? And his magic, because he loves the magic. He was on James Corden last night. Instead of doing carpool karaoke, they were doing singing telegrams to random people and making up different songs as they went into like a waxing place. Some woman is a waxer, and they were singing Tiny Waxer to her instead of Tiny Dancer in these suits, and they were just doing all these grams, and I'm like, this is a whole lot of hot mess going on.
And the folks that were there in the shop with their stone faces.
The people getting adorable. Their nails in the background. This one woman, I think, dropped the nail polish. Like, they were laughing so hard. But so today... In theater history.
Today in theater history.
It is a birthday of one Ira Gershwin.
Ira Gershwin. Wow.
I know, that got me really excited. 1898. I mean, I knew it was a while ago, but I didn't feel like it was 1898.
Yeah, I think it's early 20th century. How many people probably don't know who that is at all now?
It makes me sad because the man wrote Porgy and Bess, Rhapsody and Blue, Girl... I mean, what didn't the guy write? On top of half the standards that all of our grandparents were listening to on the radio show. It didn't even have to be theater. Let's see, Pulitzer Prize winning musical of The I Sing. I mean, so amazing. But yes, 1898 was his birthday. Wow. This is who was it? There was some reason. Yeah, I didn't find that one exciting. I'm sorry. This, I was like, I had it marked, and then I went to go away. And then this one, I could not do, especially Anne Ciccolella with you on and with one Lisa Shupps. But did you know that quote? It all begun tonight at the Winter Garden Theater. That would be one West Side Story. Opening in 1957. Man, can you believe it? This is another one being put on to the... I don't think they're redoing... Oh, yes, they're redoing the movie. I was like, is it going to be one of the TV... No, it's not, because actually they had open auditions for every single role. Spielberg's doing it, and he didn't precast... He said he didn't precast anyone, and I did see the open audition notices, but I don't know who's cast yet, so...
I also believe, right... Tony Kushner is doing the screenplay.
I knew they were the people were coming that were attached to it were good. So
there was a great.
Will they compete with Cats? Do you think they'll have the same type of opening?
I don't think so. Not if they had open auditions.
I think they might do a little better.
NPR's it's like ahead of talking about the history of West Side Story and talking about it's like the film and it's like and everything. Yes. It's like just recently, just this past week, in case people are curious.
Well, it's also the 100th anniversary year of Leonard Bernstein.
Yeah. So and they've had that great exhibit we were talking about. They have an exhibit in New York right now that's all this interactive, and they also have Rodgers and Hammerstein. Did you see that one?
It's at the library at Lincoln Center. Yep. It was really good.
Yeah. Let's just talk about Cheetah Rivera. That's all I need to say on that one. Okay. Yeah.
The young Cheetah Rivera.
I totally had forgotten about this play, The Drama, The Man in the Glass Booth.
Oh, yeah.
I had a professor that made me read it. I just was all like, I found it very odd. He was like, I think you'd like this. And I'm like, what made you think I'd want to? But, I'm glad I did, but I never have gone back and able to ask that gentleman why. So 1968, Robert Shaw's drama, The Man in the Glass Booth, opened.
Robert Shaw.
Actor. Six-month run. It earns a 1969 Tony Award nomination for Best Play and Best Direction, Harold Pinter.
Wow.
And Best Actor in a Play, Donald Pleasence. It's a play. He plays the Nazi war criminal on trial. I was like, and what made you think I should be reading The Man in the Glass? Never. Again, it was a great play. Lily Tomlin. Miss Lily. 1985. Mm. Lily Tomlin stars in Jane Wagner's solo play, The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life
in the Universe. Yeah.
Still a wonderful script. It ran 391 performances. I didn't realize it really ran that long.
Yeah.
She earned a 1986 Tony Award for Best Actress in the play. And 15 years later, she returned to Broadway in a revival of that play. Which is so crazy. I know. Isn't that kind of crazy? I found this interesting. 98, Matthew Bourne's newly choreographed theatrical version of the ballet Swan Lake hit London and Los Angeles and then went to run on Broadway. At the Neil Simon Theater, it became a dance theater show with man dancing the swan roles usually assigned to women. And it was produced, I couldn't believe this who the co-producers were. I remember this, but I was like, I don't remember the co-producers. Cameron McIntosh and Catherine Doré. Cameron McIntosh is like the dude who does Mary Poppins. Like it to me was just so like, whoa. So kind of crazy. And because Lisa just loves saying the Zooey Logic Al Cristal and the glass menagerie is what Nick says. The actual real glass menagerie, 2013 was the production with Cherry Jones and Zachary Quinto and Celia Keane and Bojo. I didn't realize it was that long ago.
Yeah, me neither.
Kind of crazy.
Like, wow,
2013, it made me go, what? So another great birthday today, T.S. Eliot. Meow. Ty had to talk about the cats.
Of course.
There was a whole method to my crazy.
That was a good meow. I'm
that
impressed.
And I got to play Nancy Kerrigan going, why? Philip, she sums it up for me in life a lot. Philip Bosco and Mary Beth Hurt. And we're just going to play literally just a minute or two. There's so many good Gershwin tunes. I'm like, who's played something? I forgot I had this album. It's my two favorite Willies in life are Shakespeare and Nelson, and it's a little bit of Nelson singing some Gershwin.
Oh.
It's the greatest album. It's kind of, he plays very much similar to how he plays on his Teatro album with that kind of like flamenco-y Argentinian. You know, he has his very own unique way of playing a guitar, but it has that feel similar when he plays with Daniel Lanois and all that. It's all Gershwin. He did an album. There's a few other duets on there. But yeah, really cool. So we have Austin Shakespeare here. We've wound all these intertwined. We talked a little bit about Cleopatra at the beginning, but she's not rocking in Austin. She's staged reading in a costume this weekend. Only the first time Austin Shakespeare has ever done Antony and Cleopatra. And I have to tell you, Ann Ciccolella, I found that hard to believe.
Isn't it amazing?
I had to call your publicist on the phone and go, is that right? Did they just put that out there? I literally had a little bit of a panic attack. I can't believe that. So you're this first time that Austin Shakespeare has ever done Antony and
Cleopatra.
It's
such a huge piece. I mean, the full production has 42 scenes. So it's quite
42 scenes.
It's like one, also like one of the of Shakespeare's largest casts too. There's just like loads and loads.
So we
of
have some doubling, tripling, quadrupling. And, but I was we're having
well, you're
fun.
Doing a stage reading in costume. You have this great little video out now that gives you a nice taste and a feel. I liked it. I didn't just see it. I liked it and I shared it.
Oh, thank you.
But it really does. It's kind of, it was interesting. It gave me this. The play's haunting, but it's not haunting. Like, but you don't. The world doesn't think of Antony and Cleopatra as haunting. Mm-hmm. And the, but what you've done in the stage reading and with the costumes and the music, from what I saw in the clip, I was like, oh, this is kind of exciting. So, how many? First of all, let me just say you have the Fran Dorn.
Yeah, we're pretty excited.
you also like have Robert in this also.
Yes, Robert Ramirez is playing Antony.
I just, that was great. How many, but I saw there was a good amount of cast. So with a cast that's normally 40 people or so, what are you?
It's 11. No, I'm saying 42 scenes.
42 scenes, sorry. Yes.
But so we have 11 persons playing all the many, many roles, but they're just doing Antony and Cleopatra. And actually, Ray's just doing Ina Barbas, who's sort of Antony's sidekick.
I was just about to say, Ray, tell me, because you're kind of like... I like the sidekicks to be
Yes, I'm the sidekick, and I also provide the narration.
We've never done narration before.
Because the play is so long.
Yeah, so
I took off my glasses with an interesting when I heard narration. So how did you put narration to this? Did you write the narration?
Bob Jones worked on it, and the Hudson Shakespeare Theater originally did it with some narration, so
that's really cool.
It is interesting.
That's really cool. So, so tell us a little bit about your character, Ray.
Well, Ina Barbas, as we said, is Antony's sidekick, so to speak. He's his right hand man and admires very much Antony's, you know, military prowess and his courage, etc. And gets quite disillusioned by his relationship with Cleopatra, because he sees Cleopatra as sort of distracting Antony from all that he should be doing, and it sort of diminishes his greatness, so to speak.
That's awesome. Now, I know you have your script open, and I meant to ask you this earlier. Yeah. So, did you want to do a little bit?
I'll do a little bit.
I didn't want to put you on the spot,
We're
just going to show how the sausage is made here.
Yeah. This is one of the more famous set pieces in the play, where Ina Barbas describes seeing Cleopatra in her barge down the Nile, so to speak. The barge she sat in, like a burnished throne, burned on the water. The poop was beaten gold, purple the sails, and so perfumed that the winds were lovesick with them. For her own person, it beggared all description. She did lie in her pavilion, cloth of gold of tissue, or picturing that Venus where we see the fancy outwork nature. Her gentlewomen, like the Nereides, so many mermaids tended her in the eyes and made their bends adorning at the helm. A seeming mermaid steers. The silken tackle swell with the touches of those soft flowered hands that Yarly frame the office. From the barge, a strange, invisible perfume hits the sense of the adjacent wharves. Upon her landing, Antony sent to her, invited her to supper. She replied, it should be better he became her guest, which she entreated. Our courteous Antony, whom ne'er the word of no woman heard speak, being barbered 10 times o'er, goes to the feast, and for his ordinary pays his heart for what his eyes ate only. Though Antony must leave her utterly, he will not, never. Age cannot wither her, nor custom stale her infinite variety. Other women cloy the appetites they feed, but she makes hungry where most she satisfies.
I totally stepped a foot and a half away from my mic, had my glasses off my feet, and I was like, uh-huh.
That's great.
Like, oh, wait, yeah. I have to go back to her microphone. We're doing the show. Oh, that's kind of exciting. That's kind of, that's really cool. All right, we're running out of time, but I do have a question or two.
Sure.
So we don't have 42 scenes. So how long is this show? What would people expect? So now they're
It's sort of a regular size show for us. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes. It's 20 scenes. But Lowell Bartholomew has some fabulous projections. And I told him, oh, do six. He's like, I'm doing 20. Okay, fine, do 20. But Patrick has got haze in the air and the lighting is gorgeous.
I could tell there was a lot more than just costumes and stage reading when seeing this thing. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is like, I've come to the Moor. Like, okay, this is kind of exciting. Yeah. What would you say for age on this one? PG-13?
I think if you're 12 years old and you're comfortable with Shakespeare, the story is very accessible. You'd be surprised. But I'd say 12 and up.
Okay. And why so long on Antony and Cleopatra?
I don't know. I mean, the truth is, having Fran Dorn, she did it 30 years ago. We're ready for her to do it again.
Well, I'm glad that you're doing it. I'm glad that you were on here. We have to say goodbye. I want to tell folks where to get this, get all the information, and then we're gonna sign off. So thank you so much, Anne Ciccolella and Ray Schultz, here with Austin Shakespeare with Antony and Cleopatra. Running at Ballet Austin's Austin Ventures Studio Theater, September 29th and 30th. It's just this weekend. For more information, you may visit austinshakespeare.org. We're going to go out with the song Cleopatra. That's kind of hilarious, from a musical called Salad Days. But stand by next for Austin Monitor News. We'll be back next week when we look at happening offstage and on the air. And there's no backstage today.
There was a lady of Egypt on town. The barge she sat in was of burnished gold. Her moral code made the Sphinx perspire. Her Roman scandal set the Nile on fire. They tried to make a